Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. My name is Ramesh Vaitalingam, and today's interview is with Vicky Price, former joint head of the UK's Government Economic Service, and author of a new book called Greekonomics, The Euro Crisis and Why Politicians Don't Get It. Vicky and I met at the Bristol Festival of Economics in late November 2012, and she began our conversation by explaining her original scepticism about Europe's single currency.
Yes, I didn't think that it was an optimal currency area at all. I had great concerns about the ability of a number of the countries to be able to respond to any crisis that would come their way from any external forces. Because, of course, once you remove the ability to do anything about exchange rates and monetary policy itself, after you have already taken away the balance of payments constraints and countries have done all sorts of weird things in the process, not worrying about their own productive capacity and competitiveness, you're left with countries with serious problems, and they would have inevitably to go and borrow a lot from the markets if they could, and they would be left with a very high debt to GDP ratio. So I always thought it was a pretty tricky thing to embark on, and it depended a lot on political will to start it and then to keep it going in terms of whether the euro would survive in the future. So I was certainly cautioning against it, and worked, in fact, with the UK government when they were putting together the five economic tests. I was already working for the DTI at the time and contributed to the Treasury's work.
Greece is painted as the villain by many commentators in terms of causing this crisis. It's all sprung from southeastern Europe. But your book very much wants to argue against that, and you have experience as originally born in Greece, much deeper knowledge, I guess, of the way their economy and society works. Give us a flavour of what's wrong with that perception.
Well, the problem, of course, did not originate with Greece. What happened with Greece is that all the problems that were already inherent in the euro creation, and the fact that there was no real institution to ensure a lender of last resort, there were no transfer of resources from the rich to the poorer countries in the time of crisis, none of these things were anticipated. And of course, you still had a banking system that was very different from country to country. That all, of course, meant that countries like Greece, which had lost in terms of competitiveness over the period, would be hardest hit, and probably much earlier than many others. But of course, remember that a lot of the credit expansion that took place in the periphery countries, whether it's Greece you're looking at or whether it's Spain, was financed by the German and French banks. So they actually benefited very significantly from this and encouraged this type of behaviour by those countries, the house-building boom in Spain, household credit expansion in Greece, and a sort of construction boom there too, frankly. And then, of course, the lower interest rates that governments had to pay for the debt, since the markets assumed that everybody was equally risk-free and rates were so low for everyone, encouraged governments to not worry too much about how much they were spending. Originally, of course, they benefited from having lower interest rates in terms of their own sort of deficit figures. But then, of course, when the crisis hit and the markets realized that actually all countries were not the same and there was no real lender of last resort there, those interest rates rose so significantly that a number of these countries found it unable to keep going. And of course, they were facing basically bankruptcy. And the only way out was bailouts or being financed by the European Central Bank. And that's what happened. So Greece was perhaps a bit of an outlier in the sense of having done fewer structural reforms over the period, being even more uncompetitive than many other countries as a result of this, having basically not worried about its balance of payments and buying lots of German goods, and really doing nothing about improving its own sustainable production process going, or seriously encouraging inward investment. It was very bureaucratic, had a very inefficient public sector, and a very large number of civil servants who weren't really doing an awful lot at all. And of course, all that needed to be tackled. But the worst thing about Greece is that it just had no room for manoeuvre at all. Inflation was still going up because it had to start raising taxes after the IMF moved in and the troika of the European Central Bank, the European Union and the International Monetary Fund started giving it some cash at least to keep going. But they insisted on tax rates going up. So we've ended up with a country which could only react by reducing very substantially its wages and hence living standards, but with inflation still higher than the rest of Europe. So obviously it went into a very sharp decline. Nobody would spend anything, nobody would invest. The public sector was not paying its contractors. The result has been a reduction in GDP, which has been greater than any other country has seen in Europe. 5 years of decline, 20% reduction in GDP over those 5 years, and more to come next year.
Is policy going in the right direction now? Is the new Greek government making the right policy? Are the kind of conditions being imposed on them by the Troika going in the right direction?
And is there is it in a way that we can see a positive turn in Greek growth that's going to happen before social unrest really starts to build much more?
Well, the difficulty with Greece now is that all those years of decline have meant that the population is just fed up, and actually showed that in the elections that we've had recently. And it can't take an awful lot more. If your unemployment rate is 26% and your youth unemployment rate 58%, practically one of the highest, I think it's alongside Spain as being the highest in Europe, then there is despair that sets in. Banks don't lend to you. And it is important, though, for the government to get the trust of the people that it can implement some things that they've said they would, and also the trust of the Europeans that they can do it. But also they need to demonstrate themselves that they're not corrupt, that they're doing the right things. But in reality, more austerity for Greece will simply mean a lot less growth in the future again, and at some point I think things will turn quite nasty. We've already seen the growth of right-wing and left-wing parties, concerns about the continuation of democracy, the sort of things that Europe is now beginning to worry about. And the interesting thing is that Greece has been a bit of a catalyst for the change of thinking by the International Monetary Fund. It's recently come out and said, actually, austerity measures, particularly at a time when everyone is cutting back all around you, may not lead to what we expected it would, in the sense that, in fact, GDP reduction will be even bigger, which really means then that your deficit is just not going to improve, and your debt will, if anything, continue to go up. So maybe something else needs to be done. And there's something else, I think. We're reaching the stages where, in my view, that's inevitable, has to be writing down more debt. There's already been a haircut, by which I mean a reduction in what particularly the private sector can get back from its lending to the Greeks, which happened a few months ago. We're probably going to see another one, and all sorts of other measures to also reduce the value of debt, which has been held by public bodies, whether it's the European Central Bank or any other sovereign bodies that hold debt. So basically we are talking about serious reduction in the debt position of Greece to move it back to something sustainable, like the 120 or 122% people are talking about now, and perhaps an extension of the period over which the Greeks need to be delivering various things, particularly on structural reform, but also deficit areas. And that, I think, has to be the way forward, and I think we are getting quite close to it, but I don't think it's going to be just Greece. In my view, similar things will have to happen, possibly with Spain and with Ireland and Portugal. We're really talking about also the terms of those loans being improved. I think without that, there is just no light at the end of the tunnel for any of those countries. And if anything, the Eurozone will move into further recession in the years ahead rather than the improvement that people are hoping for. And that would be very, very bad for the UK, for example.
Lots of people are talking about the need for deeper union. We have the report from the four European presidents talking about financial union and fiscal union and deeper, truer economic union and ultimately more political union. What faith do you place in that kind of process?
I think in order for some of these things to happen, in other words, a more benign look at what the various countries that are now heavily indebted, you know, can do in the future to have a bit of a get-out clause, there has to be some reassurance, if you like, for the core countries in Europe that from here on, the countries that have been given this treatment, and perhaps the more benevolent treatment, will be behaving in a way that will not lead to crisis again in the future, which does mean a lot more supervision of budgets. It means really more of an economic union, which should have happened ages ago. But it also means a number of things that some of these core countries have so far tried not to have, which is transfers of funds from the core to the poorer if necessary, banking union, which actually also involves having deposit protection insurance in all countries, which is borne by everyone, rather than leaving international governments to do that. Without these things, we're not going to move closer to having some stability in the future. But will this mean more political union? I think, unfortunately, perhaps for the Europeans, if that's what they wanted, a lot of what's happened recently has meant that countries have become more nationalistic, more concerned about what others are imposing on them. There are issues about the democratic deficit which has arisen as a result of this. So I think it's going to be a very bumpy road, and therefore, at the end of the day, will be a muddle through rather than what perhaps those who originally thought of the euro as a way to achieve political union may have hoped.
Vicky Bryce, thank you very much.